Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. I am Maria, your Chorus Call operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the Eurobank Holdings conference call to present and discuss the full year 2020 financial results. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Fokion Karavias, CEO. Mr. Karavias, you may now proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and welcome to Eurobank's 2020 results presentation. Together with me is our CFO, Harris Kokologiannis, and the investor relations team. I will start with our last year's performance, present the highlights of our updated NPE plan, as well as our medium-term financial goals, and then Harris will elaborate further. 2020 was a challenging year due to the pandemic. However, the economic shock was mitigated to some extent by strong policy measures at the European and domestic levels. In Greece, the policy support was reflected in a number of key areas: in containing unemployment at about 16%, in ample liquidity conditions supported by the TLTRO, in deposits increase by about 20 billion euros across the banking system, in historically low sovereign bond rates as a result of the ECB's debt, and finally, in resilient real estate prices, residential and commercial. In our group's other core markets, Bulgaria and Cyprus, it is positive that the economic shock was milder than the initial expectations. The adverse effect of the pandemic continues in the first quarter of 2021. However, on the positive side, Greece is one of the most advanced EU countries in vaccinations, which should significantly improve economic activity in the second half of the year. Tourism revenues are expected at 40%-50% of 2019, which is more than double of last year's performance. Additionally, Greece is well ahead in the planning and preparations of the Resilience and Recovery Fund, which should bring forward disbursements even this year. The banking sector is expected to play an important role in channeling and leveraging these funds to the economy. Coming now to Eurobank's initiatives, since the pandemic outbreak, our top priorities have been to protect our employees and support our clients with new financing and payment moratoria. It is noteworthy that credit expansion for business loans in Greece reached a 10-year record in 2020. Finally, through leveraging on our digital infrastructure and transaction channels, we were able to fully service our clients. Our operating performance remained resilient, with core PPI exceeding initial guidance. Harris will give you the full details in a few minutes. A major milestone for the bank was the completion of the Cairo securitization. It significantly de-risked our balance sheet and delivered the best NPE ratio among Greek banks at 14%. Coverage of NPEs increased to 62%, which includes 400 million euros provision overlays in anticipation of the COVID-19 impact. As a result, our Texas ratio has improved by about 30 percentage points to 63%. Moving now into the 2021 outlook, we intend to reach a single-digit NPE ratio, not in 2022, but instead in this year. As you can see on slide seven, we are launching a new securitization of 3.3 billion euros with the code name Mexico, which translates to a pro forma NPE ratio of around 6.7%. Taking into account the potential impact of the COVID-19, which is assumed a 900 million euros positive formation, the NPE ratio should be at 9% or lower by the end of 2021, and then further converge towards the European average in 2022. The cost of risk ratio reflects that improvement, declining materially to 60 basis points in 2022. Now, moving on slide 10, our financial goals reflect the updated NPE plan and cost of risk improvement. Let me highlight the earnings per share of around 10 and 15 cents in 21 and 22 respectively, and the return on tangible book value of 10% in 2022. Despite the cleanup of legacy NPEs, our fully loaded CET1 ratio is decreasing by almost 100 basis points per annum, both in 21 and 22, as you can see on the top of slide 9. Coming back on slide 10, organic capital generation could exceed 100 basis points after 2022, paving the way for dividends distribution. Overall, we are pleased to keep delivering in a consistent way on what we promised in terms of NPE reduction and resilient operating results. With Mexico, we will maintain our leading position in asset quality terms, moving decisively in single-digit NPE ratio in 2021, and then double-digit returns on tangible book value and capital accretion of more than 100 basis points as of 22. At this point, I would like to ask our CFO to present our full year results and the outlook before opening the Q&A session.
Thank you, Fokion. Let's first see our financial results for the full year 2020, as highlighted on page 12. Our recurring net profits for 2012 reached 544 million euro, of which 196 million in the fourth quarter. Core pre-provision income was up 4.2% year on year and 12.6% from the previous quarter, exceeding our guidance. This is mainly due to commission income, which increased by 8.6% on a yearly basis and by 14.4% from the previous quarter. Net interest income was lower year on year by 2% and slightly lower quarter on quarter by 0.6%. Group operating expenses were lower year on year by 3.6% and increased by 6% due to lower personnel costs. Asset quality metrics were further improved from the previous quarter. NP stock decreased by 343 million euro and the NP ratio declined to 14% at the end of 2020. Cost of risk for the year amounted to 1.5% of net loans. Provision coverage stood at 61.9%, which is higher by 660 basis points year on year, incorporating about 400 million euro management overlays in anticipation of any potential adverse effect of the pandemic post-moratory expiration. Regarding capital adequacy, our total capital ratio increased by 70 basis points from the previous quarter, standing at 16.3%. We continue supporting our clients' liquidity with new loans. The net organic increase in our performing loans reached 2.1 billion euro in 2020. Finally, deposits increased by 2.4 billion euro and loans to deposit ratio receded further to 79.1%. Concerning the 2021 outlook and on page 8, net interest income increase is expected to be lower by around 3% versus 2020, as the lower income from bonds and the foregone revenue from disposed NPEs are mitigated by lower wholesale funding costs, TLTRO, and income on new loans. Fees, on the other hand, should grow by circa 10% year-on-year, offsetting the loss from net interest income. Growth is expected in assets under management and bankers' runs, network fees, credit cards, and income from investment property. Operating expenses in Greece should be flat versus 2020, as staff and random bank admin cost reduction should be broadly matched by higher investments in IT infrastructure and digitization of operations and client experience. Overall, considering also the expected increase of Southeastern Europe, core PPI should be higher by approximately 1% at 875 million euro. Cost of risk is expected lower at around 130 basis points from 152 in 2020. Moving on capital outlook for next 2 years and on page 9. Total CAT is expected to stand at the end of 2021 at 16%, as the impact of the new securitization, the loan growth effect, the IFRS 9 transition, and various regulatory adjustments are mitigated by the organic capital generation and planned capital accretive transactions. These refer to a synthetic securitization of performing business loans and a strategic partnership on merchant acquiring business. In 2022, total CAD increases to 16.6% as the higher profitability more than offsets transitions and other adjustments impact. In that year, on a fully loaded basis, the bank should organically generate around 100 basis points of capital. The above analysis does not include the additional capacity of Tier 1 and Tier 2 issuance reaching in total 1 billion euro or 250 basis points of capital. So this completes my presentation, and we may now open the floor for your questions.
The first question comes from the line of Floriani Jonas with Axia Ventures. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Congratulations for the results achieved in the year and for the outlook. My first question is on the new securitization. Just wondering if there's any dates to share in terms of non-binding and binding periods, and also on the capital impact you show on slide 9. I suspect that the minus 50 basis points includes both the P&L impact and the RWA relief, right? Second, still on capital, so how should I think about your strategy behind the AT1 and Tier 2? Is it something that you're considering adding to your capital position, or maybe do something this year? You know, just wondering how we should look at your capital position going forward, including or not those instruments. And then on slide 8, in terms of new disbursements for 2021, just willing to understand, how do you think about what kind of level new disbursements on a gross base you expect for the year? I think that 2020 was probably a strong and unusual year, given, you know, what we went through. So as we start to normalize, what that level should be in this year, and also the some view on rates. I remember in previous calls you were guiding for small decline in corporate yields. I suspect that this is still holds. So I'll stop here. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much for your questions. I will take the first one, and then Harris will answer the questions about capital, disbursements, and rates. In terms of the securitization, as we mentioned, this is about 3.3 billion euros in size. It involves different segments of loans, including retail, which would be around 85% of the securitization, and SME and corporate loans, which should be around 15%. The capital impact in terms of fully loaded CET1 is 25 basis points, and it increases to 50 basis points if we consider the impact on total CAT. And this includes the loss, obviously, from the mezzanine disposal, the impact on the expected loss excess, and the risk-weighted assets relief. Now, in terms of the timeline that you ask, we have just started discussions with the rating agencies about the tranching and the pre-rating of the securitization. And this should be completed by the end of April or beginning of May. Then, subsequently, we're going to apply for the HAPS protection, Hercules 2, and this securitization may be one of the first or the first to apply for Hercules 2. The process for the sale of the mezzanine tranche may start sometime during summer, receiving binding bids by the end of September. And based on this timeline, we should be able to classify the assets as held for sale by the end of the third quarter of 2021 and have full derecognition and closing by year end, provided that we will receive the SRT from the SSM before year end.
Now, as regards capital, as you may see on page 9, the projection shows that the bank is comfortably above, not only from the extraordinary levels that have been put in place until the end of 2022 in the context of the pandemic, but also comfortably above from the SREP requirement that would apply if these measures were not in place. So in this context, we just saw at the bottom the capacity of the bank as regards AT1 and Tier 2. However, it is not included in our capital planning. Now, as regards disbursements, 2020 was a very strong year, also boosted by the state support programs. 2021 is expected to be a strong year as well on new loan production. However, given that we're not going to have these state support programs, we should expect the net increase of performing loans to be close to 20% lower than the one we had in 2020. I remind you that in 2020 we had a loan growth of the net growth of performing loans was 2.1 billion euro. And this is expected to offset any impact that we might have in, from a mild further decline of corporate loans.
Okay, thanks. Just a quick follow-up on Mexico. Shall we expect also to see a distribution of the shares like we saw in the Cairo transaction?
This is something that we have not decided yet. As soon as we have something new on that, we will update you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Memisoglu Osman with Ambrosia Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, many thanks for your time and presentation. Just two questions, really. One is, are you able to give us a bit more color on the trends for loans coming out of moratoria? And then just a confirmation, if I got it right, the Mexico transaction is supposed to be happening towards the end of the year, so there is no NII impact from that in your guidance. Would that be correct? Thank you.
Okay, let's start in terms of asset quality, what we see about moratoria and so on and so forth, and then Harris will take the second question. Mm-hmm. I suggest we turn on page 30 of the presentation, in which we're trying to provide an analysis of the moratoria evolution and an assessment of payment pattern segmentation post-moratoria. So on this page, on the left part, we show that out of the 4.9 billion euros moratoria in Greece in the fourth quarter, 3.3 billion euros expired during the course of 2020. 0.9 billion euros are expiring as we speak during the first quarter of 21, and the rest, which is about 0.7 billion euros, and are related mainly to the tourism sector, will expire within the current year towards the end of the year. Now, on the right part of the same page, we show that about 80% of the clients whose moratoria have expired during December or are about to expire restore normal, return to normal debt servicing. And let me become more specific on that. 42% of total moratoria, so 42% of the 4.9 billion euros, are clients who restore normal debt servicing based on their own means. 20% are clients who have used the subsidy of Gefyra, but still to resume into a full payment pattern. 5% are clients who are returning into payment, but through a gradual restoration. This is a so-called step-up program, and this includes a 50% installment for during 2021, and then moving into 100% in January of 22. Please make a note here that 5% is lower compared to what we were initially anticipating, which is obviously something positive. Mm-hmm. Then we have about 0.7 billion euros, or 13% of the moratoria which are expiring until year end, the tourism sector. And let me notice here that these are very good quality customers, strong customers, and we don't really expect any sort of problems from this segment. And therefore, our analysis concludes with about 20% of clients which may face the risk of default. Mm-hmm. Now, this is obviously a theoretical exercise. It is a segmentation that we have done, but early signs are encouraging and verify this segmentation as the majority of clients return to normal payment. However, it is early to draw any final conclusions. Based on January and February data, we expect NPE formation of about 250 million euros positive for the first quarter of 2021. For the full year, as we have shown on page 8, we expect NPEs to increase by about 0.9 billion euros. Sorry, not page 8, page 7. Where we saw this increase of 0.9 billion euros for the full year. And this obviously is the net increase. That means that includes inflows from moratoria, inflows from other defaults, minus outflows, either because of curings or other remedial actions. This scenario appears to be a reasonable one, which combined with the Mexico securitization will lead the NPE ratio at a single-digit level at the end of 2021 at 9% or lower. Now, let me add and a few words about the cost of risk, which is related to this asset quality outlook. We expect the 2021 cost of risk to decrease from 1.52 to about 1.3%, 130 basis points this year, and then to have a very serious, a very material decline further to 60 basis points in 2022. You can see these figures at the bottom of page 7. In terms of NPE coverage, we are at 62% in the end of 2020. This stock of provisions includes 400 million euros of provision overlays in anticipation of the pandemic impact. That means that we have about 7 percentage points buffer, and we expect that the coverage by the end of 2021 to come closer to what we consider a normalized level, which is 55%.
Now, as regards Mexico, you are right that we envisage the closing of the transaction at the end of the year, so there is no any impact on NII in 2021. Any impact will be as of 2022, and this is estimated at approximately 35 million euro, which is the loss on NII from NPEs, less the proceeds from the coupon. However, in order to have the big picture, we should compare this with the great benefit on the provision line as of 2022, as Fokion said, that it is approximately 250 million euro improvement year on year on cost of risk. Second, we have to take into account the improvement in the quality of our revenue. So in this context, just to provide you with two figures, in 2019, we had close to 350 million euro out of 138 billion, close to 25% NII coming from impaired loans. In 2022, this figure comes down to less than 60, that is out of close to 1.3 or something less billion euro of NII. So this is something close to 5% of total net interest income. So you may notice a very substantial improvement in the quality of our revenues.
Yes. If I can follow up on one thing. Are you able to disclose roughly how much write-offs do you plan to do this year?
This is part of the 0.9 billion euros increase in the NP stock. As I said, it includes both inflows and outflows and write-offs. But at the moment, we don't have the final breakdown between these figures.
Fair enough. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Sevim Mehmet with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks very much for the presentation and congratulations on the results. My first question will be on your cost of risk guidance for 2021, please. So you're guiding for 130 basis points cost of risk. And I suspect that this contains the impact from the Mexico transaction. Could you confirm that this is correct? And secondly, I mean, the 60 basis points cost of risk guidance for 2022 is obviously very positive, but also a significant decrease from the 2021 level. And also, when we look at your previous guidance, which was basically in 2020 before COVID hit, you were targeting a 75 basis points cost of risk back then. My question would be, what makes you more optimistic now on the 2022 level that the cost of risk will be lower than pre-COVID guidance back then? These would be my first two questions, and I'll have one more later. Thank you very much.
Okay. First, let me elaborate that the cost of risk for 2021, the 130 basis points, does not include the impact that we may have from the sale of the mezzanine tranche. This comes on top, and as you can see from page 9, where we have the capital evolution, the impact from the sale of mezzanine is included in the negative 50 basis points, which is the impact on the total CAD. And as I said before, this figure incorporates the loss from the mezzanine disposal, again, on top of the 130 basis points, the impact on the EL excess, and the risk-weighted assets relief. I hope this is clear now. And now moving to 2022, indeed we have a more optimistic scenario than before. Obviously, there are a number of things which are different. The difference is not that big, but there are a number of things which is which are different. One is that compared to the previous analysis, if I remember correct, the previous scenario, if I remember correctly, now we have an even cleaner book in 2022. Second, a number of parameters are behaving in a better way. Let me mention the real estate values, which have remained very resilient either through the shock of the pandemia. And that would allow us to have a lower cost of risk than the previous forecasted.
That's very clear. Thanks very much, Fokion. And if I may ask, what's very impressive is that you're still keeping your 22 ROTE target of 10% despite, you know, COVID-19 and all the challenges that come with it. What do you think is the main risk then today that may negatively impact your plans for this? So is there, you know, do you think that 60 basis points guidance is, for example, would that be on the bullish side or would that be rather on the base case side, for example? And do you see any other risks that may come in the way?
The main risk that the banking system is facing is the potential inflow that we may have from the moratoria, the inflow that we may have from COVID. As we have discussed already on page 7, we have an estimate of 0.9 billion euros. We believe that this is a fair estimate and based on what we have seen so far in January and February. But I already mentioned that it is early to draw any final conclusions. Therefore, from what we have discussed, I would say that one thing that we have to follow very closely is this this figure. Now, on the 50 basis points impact on the securitization, we feel quite comfortable that the loss is going to be contained within this this envelope.
That's very clear. Thanks very much, Fokion.
The next question comes from the line of Boulouris Alexandros with Wood & Co. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for the presentation. I would like to ask regarding the loss on the mezzanine that you mentioned on the disposal on the mezzanine on accounting wise, will this go directly from the P&L and the profitability of 2021, or you can use the previous hive down? How will that work accounting wise? That's my first question. My second is regarding the slide on capital where you mentioned the 100 bps capital accretive transactions. If you could tell us a bit what that will entail. And then also on page 7 where you show your group NPE coverage, I was just curious on 2022 where that grows to 65%. Is that the coverage you are comfortable going forward with? That's curious also about the increase from 55 to 65. Thank you.
P&L impact from the mezzanine loss will pass through our P&L. Of course, our profitability in 2021 will be such so as to absorb it. But the answer is yes, we will pass through P&L. Now, let me elaborate on the capital accretive initiatives that we envisage for this year. First, on the strategic partnership for the merchant acquiring business. Actually, the bank is considering to seek a strategic partner for its merchant acquiring business within 2021. And this transaction would allow actually management focusing more on growth of card issuing, credit extension, and other core business. I would say that there is a pan-European trend that major banks spin off the credit card acquiring business. And the main reason is that this business going forward relies heavily on technology, innovation, and CapEx in this area becomes day by day non-core. Now, as regards synthetic securitization, the project refers to a synthetic risk transfer transaction for SME large corporate performing portfolio that the bank is currently working on and plan to implement in the second half of 2021. The bank in this case will buy loss protection on the mezzanine tranche of its securitized business portfolio. And we should be able to quantify the effect of this transaction on total cut by mid-year. Actually, let me explain to you that the loans are not removed from the balance sheet from an accounting point of view, but actually the bank enjoys a capital relief through a decrease of RWAs. So together with a strategic partnership for the merchant acquiring, the two transactions should add 100 basis points of total cut in this year.
May I ask on this, what is the impact though on net interest income and fees? Because I assume that you gain capital, but you give up some profits, I guess, from this to relief measures.
Sure. The impact on P&L, actually, you are right. It decreases a bit our fee level at the area of close to 20 million euro per annum. However, this impact has been already incorporated in the outlook we provide for 2022. And I forgot to say that also the impact on NII coming from the Mexico securitization has been also incorporated in the outlook that we have provided for 2022.
Now, with respect to the coverage, which increases at 65% in 2022, still we believe that a normal level in terms of coverage is around 65%. But in 2022, the amount of NPEs is so low that small changes in the provisioning increases the coverage. So it is more like a mathematical effect than the intention to increase coverage.
So it increases basically from the cost of risk of 60 bps that you
That's
take
correct.
For the year.
Yeah.
Okay, clear. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from the line of Cordara Alberto with Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. I join my colleagues in congratulating for this good set of results. I have three questions. The first one relates to the fact that you mentioned earlier on dividends. So can you be a bit more specific which year you think you can start paying dividends again? And in case, what would need to be the payout ratio that we factor in our models? The second question relates to the slide when you show the stage two loans. I saw that these have been quite stable throughout the years, so they're up 0.6% quarter on quarter. And they're basically flat on a year-to-year basis. Now, my question to you is, I found this number a bit strange because Looking at some other European banks, we had a pretty sharp increase, in some cases even 80% plus year on year, or 40% or 20%. So why your stage two during the pandemic, they kept stable? And the final question is, you're going to have some risk-weighted asset relief thanks to the sale of NPs and the securitizations, but you are the only Greek banks that is adopting internal models. So the question is whether we should factor in some headwinds related to the fact that this sale may be conducive to you having to reassess the PD and the LGD of the performing loan portfolio. Thank you.
Okay. Let me start from the dividend, and then Harris will take the other two questions. As we state on page 10, organic capital generation of more than 100 basis points post-2022 paves the way for dividend distribution. Actually, there are three important elements which drive towards dividend payments. The first, in our view, is a single digit NP ratio, which, as we have already discussed, should be reached in 2021 post the completion of Mexico, and further decrease the following year, 2022. Second element that we have to consider is the internal capital generation capacity of the bank that we have already discussed to be about 100 basis points, which corresponds to a double-digit return on equity. And I think we tick this box also in 2022. There is a third parameter, which is also important, which is the full phase-in of the IFRS 9, which is completed in the beginning of 2023. And therefore, there is no impact after that in the capital ratios. So under these three conditions, we could consider capital distribution. Now, the exact timing and the percentage of net profit that could be distributed, I think it is too early to discuss.
As regards the absolute numbers in of stage two loans, actually this is a question of inflows and outflows. And here we had a peculiar situation in 2020 where due to the moratoria, the situation was a bit frozen. So that is the main reason that explains the low variation on the stage two loan number. Now, I'm not sure that I have understood your question about Mexico.
I think, sorry for intervening, it was not about Mexico, it was about the synthetic securitization, right?
Yes.
And the effect that this transaction may have on the LGD and the PDs of our models, correct?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this is not a true sale of the portfolio. We're not selling the loans. We are just releasing risk-weighted assets. So the concern that was the case for the sale of NPLs, which were outright sales, does not apply to the best of our knowledge. In this case, we keep on balance sheet these loans. It is just a way of releasing risk-weighted assets.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Sevim Mehmet with JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for taking my follow-up question. Just to technical questions from me, please. So one, you've had meaningful trading gains in 2020, obviously supported by the current market environment. I just wanted to ask how we should think about this line in 2021 and if there's any further room for further gains that you may book this year. And secondly, could you please give us more color on the goodwill impairment and the DTA write-off that you mentioned, which are impacting the net profit line negatively, but not the capital? So just from an accounting perspective, if you could give a little more color on this, that would be great. Thanks very much.
Sure. So in 2020, we had close to 450 million euro trading gains, mainly coming from CDBs as well as from the a sort of swap transaction with the Greek state that we made at the end of the previous year. Of course, we should not expect similar levels of trading gains in the following year. I would say that a more normalized level should be at the area of close to 100 million euro per annum. Now, as regards DTA and Grivalia goodwill, actually the DTA write down, this is the right word accounting wise, reflects the DTA recoverability analysis that we perform at every year end, and takes into account the of course the COVID-19 outbreak and its impact on the macroeconomic factors, which led us to take a more conservative view as regards tax planning and DTA recoverability. Such impairment, such write-down does not affect DTC but only DTA on temporary differences and has no any impact on the regulatory capital. Now, as regards the Grivalia goodwill impairment, first of all, let me stress that the Grivalia goodwill impairment has no any impact on Eurobank tangible book value, its regulatory capital ratios, or Grivalia's investment property book value. In the context of accounting housekeeping, let's say in a year of high trading gains, we just align the accounting figures with the regulatory capital ratios and the tangible book value of the bank.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of David Daniel with Autonomous Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. My question. You flag Tier 1 and Tier 2 having capacity to add to your capital ratios. I just wanted to ask, is this something you're considering in the short term? Should we think about this in 2021? And secondly, have you been set an interim MREL requirement? And if so, when does that become binding as well as the end state? Thanks.
Yeah, regarding your first question, as Harris mentioned, it is not in our planning to issue Tier 1 or Tier 2 either in 2021 or 2022. This is additional capacity that we have for these two instruments and additional capital buffers, but our capital plan does not rely, and I repeat, does not rely on the issuance of these instruments.
Now, on the second question regarding MREL, let me take you on page 16 of the presentation, whereby we plan, in the context of MREL compliance purposes, to issue 1 billion euro of senior unsecured preferred debt in 2021, out of which close to 500 million euro it is about a transaction envisaged in the first half of the year. And similar issuance volumes of senior unsecured, again preferred, is scheduled for 2022 and 2023.
Okay, thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions at this time. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Karavias for any closing comments. Thank you.
Let me thank you all for participating in this call. for your questions and the discussion that we had that was quite interesting. We would be available for any follow-up questions anytime that you would like. Thank you.